And three, two, one. Hey. Oh, okay. Well.
All right.
Yeah.
That was great.
Here we are.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
So the the plan is that what I'm going to do is when I can't find my floodlight. I haven't found it yet. So when I find my floodlight, I'll just put that behind me like I did back in my old place and shine it, and then I'll plug this thing back in. But so for tonight, it's going to look a little weird.
No, I mean, it looks like a room. It looks good.
Yeah, but I'm not going for it.
You got a Maribird back there in the corner?
I do. I've got a Maribird. I got the Mr. 100 Army that someone made for me at CCW.
Cabinets.
Yeah.
Bowser's sitting over there playing. I can't tell what he's playing.
He's playing Ninja Turtles. Yeah.
Turtles? Yeah. Oh, I saw the intro now. Now I can tell.
And then you can't really see the signs because the video is still shitty because it's still Discord. But the sign says we're back, Podzilla 1985.
Nice.
It's also still backwards because of course it is.
That's fine.
But it's better than recording at Jesse's fucking bedroom. So here we are.
Yes.
Yes, have some.
Much more stable. Let's put it that way.
Much more stable. It's good to. It's. I'm looking at the screen. It's good to have graphics.
Yay, graphics.
You were doing stuff while I was showing these to Cody. Sarah found me a couple things on Amazon.
I saw that. Yeah, I caught glimpses while I was doing stuff. I saw that, and I think you had a little trap too, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It lights up and then
okay.
That's so cool.
Careful, like you're gonna let the ghosts out.
And then, I looked into the trap, Ray.
And then the ghost will get her pregnant. Hi, Michaela. Hi, Joseph. Oh, we're back. God. We're back. Lindsay and I are coming from our new studios. Completely not finished, though. What you can't see are the boxes piled up on the sides. But I do like that since this room is deeper, you get I like the longer view back there. Yeah, Lindsay's the same way. Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep it this way because Lindsay and I have a very similar theme going with just all of our shit in the background. I like the arcade cabinets. I'm going to keep that. You can kind of see my horror film posters in the background too. We got the Lost Boys and the thing right next to it. You can't see the rest of them, unfortunately, but they're there. So I assure you. My series.
I'm trying to find this thing that Hunter just showed us, and I don't think this is the right listing on Amazon, but I feel the need to share with you the one of the preview images from this Amazon posting.
Okay.
Specifically.
Both of them came with little tiny sticker books, too, which they're actually kind of cool. They're like Vaporwave Ghostbuster stuff.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Also, you can't see.
Let me mute this because they're in this cabinet.
No. Derpy ass dude.
I think that was Tanner's character in the RPG in the tabletop Ghostbusters we played, right? Wasn't that him?
Yeah, Dick Dickerton.
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
This man has no Tanner. You also can't see the sheer amount of brown recluses that are in my house.
Oh, those are cool vaporwave stickers.
I thought you were going to say that is cool that
they're
you
just like little
brown recluses.
No,
just like
those are not cool.
Stickers. I don't know what I'm gonna put these on. Probably not much, but like, you know,
your MacBook.
It was like $12, man. No, these are stickers. I gotta have decals on that thing.
Oh, fair. Yeah.
That way they don't get torn up. I do kind of like the ones that came in the other one. These are fun.
Oh wow, yeah. Like deconstructed. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, the traveler's come. I have a similar sticker that says E.T. Go Come.
No! Well, he dared to dream.
Wait, and he never stopped believing. Yeah.
I like that one. That's like the Podzilla logo version of the
That's what it is. If Ghostbusters joined up with Podzilla 1985, which God willing, one day it will.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, give it a couple months. Tanner said he emailed the theater, and I never heard any more about that. We should probably take over the reins.
The planning for that.
That's not a bad idea. It's not a bad
idea.
Yeah.
Don't disagree with that.
If we want that to happen.
So I have my...
I forgot all about the private screening thing.
I need you guys to tell me if I sound okay, because I have my headset plugged in through... you can't see it, and I can't pull it out in front of you, but it's one of these little... I got it at Five Below. It's like a little headphone stand, and it's got an RGB little base that lights up, and it's cheap as hell. It was literally $5, but I've got both my headset and something and my light plugged into it, and you guys sound okay to me.
Yeah, it sounds good.
And okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Those aren't your razors, are you? The new, you said no. You got those new headphones in?
Yeah, no, I'm still popping the
Logitech. Yeah, I was
going to
say, much bigger.
Yeah. No, I'm doing the Logitech still on here. Michaela, it's good to be back.
Bad boys.
It's is that the ones you use for gaming?
Yeah, does yous have the this has a retractable mic. So that's if you ever hear me moving around, that's what it is.
I have to check mine because mine's
still on. I can put it on. You have it on, it goes like that.
Mine is not blue though. Is yours blue or is that just the color?
Yep.
Yeah, mine's all black. I wonder if mine's different than yours. Did you get the crack?
Sarah has hang on. We have solid black ones.
Yeah, that's what I got.
These are Sarah's.
That's what I got. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
That basically came about because back when we, first started playing Call of Duty all the time back in November, late November, early December, my birthday came up at the end of January. She ordered me the blue ones for my birthday, and then it was one of those times where Amazon told them, we have no idea what happened to this shipment, so we're refunding you. So she bought me the black ones because you couldn't get the blue ones on sale anymore. Excuse me. Then the blue ones just showed up out of nowhere. And like the box was a little dinged, but they were fine.
Right.
So we got two for the price of one. And I said, well, don't send the other ones back. Cause she, even though she doesn't use the mic, she really likes the way that they sound. And she just plugs them into her Switch whenever she's playing it. So
yeah, I tried it.
Series S.
I tried it on the Xbox earlier. I played Red Dead for like 10 minutes just to, test the audio. I don't know how the mic sounds, but the audio sounded great. So I was pretty happy with that.
I mean, if it's the same mic as mine, then it's whatever I sound like to you guys. So
you sound fine.
Should be pretty good.
Like, I didn't want to get rid of the headset that I had. The headset that I had, Maria had bought me for Christmas, I want to say, or my birthday, one or the other. But the left earpiece, the little piece that connects in the move, shattered somehow. So, like, every time I try to adjust my headset, it falls off. And I have to like pop it back in.
Yeah.
So I'm tired of dealing with
that shit all the time.
Right.
I don't think I've ever, I don't know anybody who's ever had a completely successful move where you didn't lose or break at least one thing. Something gets screwed up along the way.
I lost a monitor.
Yeah, I know. As soon as I said it, I was like.
But I got a new monitor and, I can show you guys here real quick. Let me just get a little thing here. Yeah, I got a curved monitor. So it goes right next to my monitor and it like curves around. It's kind of neat. Whoa, welcome to MTV. Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Extreme close up. Whoa.
There you go. You can see the jam. Well, if you do that though, you can see the jam cabinet, but then you can't see the sign. And I don't have the jam cabinet on right now because I need to find the power cable for it. So let's just do that. That's good for now.
Still lower than you had it. It looks fine, but if you're wanting to show the other signs above it, it's lower.
Yeah, you're right.
There you go. That's it.
Get it at just ceiling level.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That is a Maribird in the corner. He watches over us. Michaela, you see the Mr. 100 Army sign up there. I forget who gave that to me. It was at one of the CCW shows. And it's been in my trunk forever. And
I'm gonna laugh and she's like, it was me.
I'd feel bad about that. You can't really make it out, but there's a little sign below it of a little Eggman with a like detective's hat and a.
Oh, you still have that?
That's Egbert. That's Bob. So we found that in college, and we used to call Bob Egbert. And this was the embodiment of Egbert is this thing over here. So Bob had it on his door for the longest time, and then when we all moved out. I kept it, and it's up there. It's keeping it alive. Also, suddenly my webcam is very...
Key.
Don't know why. I don't know if it just didn't appreciate
it. Not bad, but it is. It's like the FPS went down a little bit. You're down to like 50 frames instead of 60.
I don't know if it's because I was moving it around so much. I don't know. It don't matter. None of this matters.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be probably fine.
You know what I realized like precisely, I don't know, 5 minutes ago?
Michaela.
Is that I also have it leveled Graz. So he's still just level 13.
Oh, shit. I still got to pull all that up because...
we'll get to it. We don't have to. This first show back, man. We got, you know, things to reestablish. God, we've been gone for what, 2-3 weeks now?
From Star Wars. Well, for a while.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's been. I was gonna say. I say we've been gone. I assume they've still been doing like Nerd Up and other things.
There we go.
There you go.
Just PW. Yeah, Asa kept it going while we were gone. So if you're joining us, if you're watching this later, a little explanation about where we've been, because no, we didn't give up on the show. I gave up on the show a long time ago. But in this particular instance, I moved out. Lindsay and I both moved out of our apartments, and we moved into a new studio, and we were recording out of Jesse Kimball's spare room. So thank you to Jesse for putting us up. We appreciate it. But I hated doing the show from a laptop in just a bare ass room. I hated it. Absolutely hated it. So finally it got to a point where I was like, I'm not doing any more shows. Until we move, I'm not doing any more shows. And now we're moved in to our places. And I've mostly got my room set up here. My bedroom is wrecked. You don't want to see it. Lindsay's is much nicer. But now we're back.
The part you can see on screen.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, you can't see the boxes piled up on the side or the brown recluse bodies everywhere. Cause I've got glue traps everywhere. Little bastards. And we need to fix Lindsay's aspect ratio. Cause as you can tell,
jacked.
Yeah. I didn't even notice you were in 4.3 until right now.
Yes, she is. Yeah.
And I can't figure out how to fix it. We've both.
Lindsay coming to you live or with a live studio audience.
From 1985.
I mean, it makes you feel any better. I was playing Super Castlevania 4 today while I've been at home sick, so 4.3 doesn't actually throw me off right now because that's all I've been seeing on TV.
This is in my new office here. I know Cody appreciates the arcade cabinets. I'll get the NBA Jam up and running as soon as I find the power cable for it. I got another one upstairs. I'm not going to bring it down here. I'm going to leave it in the kitchen. I also have all of my retro mini systems down there on the bottom, so I can play whatever, whenever. And so I'm pretty excited about the setup. Hunter, you can kind of make them out, but I've got my X-Files pops over there. You can see the alien's gray ass head in the side.
So, that's nice.
We're excited about it. We're excited to be recording again.
Oh, it's just Link.
So going forward, we're back. The shows are back. We're going to go back to our old schedule and rebuilding this. Hunter and we discussed this earlier that if any of us ever got famous, we'll burn this podcast to the ground.
Yeah, that's probably better for all of us.
We were talking about what's his name, Mark Richards, the guy who got booted from Jeopardy.
Mike Richards, the guy's got blew his whole Jeopardy stuff away.
There it is. Yeah. So I was reading through an article. It was a really good article in The Ringer of all places.
Yes.
Talking about how he was supposed to take over the nightly hosting. Mayim Bialik was going to do the specialty hosting. And the first problem was people were mad that he got in the first place because he was the executive producer of the show at that time.
Right.
So he had a ton of influence over what episodes got shown to the metrics or to the higher ups who were making the decision of who was going to host. He got to coach the other guest hosts. So it was very easy, or it would have been very easy, basically, for him to go in and give them really bad shows. LeVar Burton, who, of course, everybody, it seems,
wants
out of the woodwork online, saying, we want LeVar Burton to host the show. And they keep saying, well, his metrics weren't very good. His episodes weren't very good. Well, Mike Richards, who had a say in this, made sure, seemingly, allegedly, you have to put it that way, that LeVar's episodes aired during
the Olympics.
And so his shows were so preempted in a lot of local networks. Yeah. And it's not just LeVar. It's just basically anybody else who... Ken Jennings, of course, was another huge front runner to host the show. also did not do very well because of the types of shows he was given. He was only given a certain, I think he recorded for only a week doing these shows, and so he did a lot of them back to back to back, whereas all the other guest hosts got 2 weeks to spread theirs out a little bit. Anyway, in the end, he gets it, and it's very much a, oh, I had no idea that they were going to pick me, and then when all this stuff came to light... Mm-hmm. When all this stuff came to light, Sony, I think it's Sony that owns Jeopardy,
yes.
Was like, okay, well, maybe we won't do that then. Like, clearly this has not gotten any better. Rather than remove him from the show completely, they bump him down from host back to his old position as executive vice producer or executive producer or whatever with like a babysitter, basically. They put another person on him to pretty much make sure that he didn't cause any more problems. Well, then the fervor continued to the point that somebody dredged up a podcast he did called The Random, like D-U-M-B, Random Podcast, which he did from his office in the offices of The Price is Right, because he was also working on The Price is Right at that time.
Yes.
And, what? Tanner wants somebody to look outside. You, apparently. I guess he's at your house.
I swear, if this motherfucker is right outside my window, I'm gonna fucking freak. Hold on 1 second.
I'm reasonably sure that he is. But anyway, to what Shannon was alluding to, we were talking about it. They dredged up this podcast that this guy had done, this Mike Richards, and there was a lot of not great stuff on it. It was supposed to be just him and his buddies just kind of joking around backstage of these shows that they were working on. And he is pretty consistently like he talks about, you know, body image issues that people have. He's really sexist. He gets a little homophobic from time to time. And so the moment that somebody got Sony's attention and went, hey, this guy that you have hosting, you know, I know that you've already kind of pulled him from that, but you left him on the show. Did you know he did this? And within hours, the entire podcast was scrubbed from the internet.
Yep.
And then he issues the statement, oh, I did these things, you know, when I was younger. Well, he wasn't that young. It wasn't that long.
It was like 2012. Ago. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. And I'm not proud of what I did then as a father and a husband. Now I would never do blah. It's the standard boilerplate. Like, I wish I hadn't gotten caught pretty much. And then today they announced officially he's been pulled completely. He's done. He's no longer part of that show in any way. I suspect if he was part of any of the rest of them, he would also be there. So, but yeah, at one point in time, I just messaged Shannon. I was like, maybe we just pull Podzilla completely from the internet.
Yeah, well, no, it would be best for all of us.
That's what worries me about if we do the plan we were going to do originally of, okay, well, we're going to save all the old episodes, and if you subscribe to our Patreon, you get all the episodes on a USB drive. Well, that just sets us up for death, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Very much so.
Yes, it does.
I feel like it's one of those things where the only people that should have the USB drives are us. So that we can then, it's mutually assured destruction.
Make copies, if one of us does it, that's it.
Yeah,
we can all get out there.
We can blackmail each other.
Exactly.
Just hand the nukes out to everybody. Yeah.
Really quick,
it's worked so far.
Joseph Swan, what y'all doing tonight? I don't know. We're just kind of reintroducing the show. We're just saying hello again.
Yeah.
We were going to level up our characters. Are we not doing that tonight on the show?
We can do that. I mean, I don't know where you guys are. I think Lindsay said she was pretty much done.
You probably need to.
I mean, yeah, this would be the first time that I can kind of do this along with you guys, because generally I do Graza stuff the day of. I just did not have time to do it earlier today. So usually I do it in advance, and that way I can go, okay, here are all the things that I had to do, and now I can tell you.
The bad part is, though, if we do that, it could take a while, and that cuts into horse time, boys. Yeah.
That's true, and it is 8 o'clock. Right. I mean, and again, since we're not starting an actual new session tonight, it doesn't have to be done until next Tuesday.
Right.
So I'm not. I got the book out, but I mean, it's not a big deal if we have that much longer. Plus, this coming weekend's a Labor Day weekend. We got long weekend. It is. So
before we get into earnest, I would like to point out the statement that came out today from Suzanne Preetz, who is the executive vice president of business and strategy for Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. Memo was shared from it was, yeah was shared with NPR. This memo made it to them. Quote, dear team, I'm writing to let you know that Mike will no longer be serving as EP of Wheel and Jeopardy effective immediately. We had hoped that when Mike stepped down from the host position at Jeopardy, it would have minimized the disruption and internal difficulties we have all experienced these last few weeks. That has clearly not happened. End quote. It's like, boy,
the thing that bugs me about that is that I remember seeing somebody saying this is pretty much their way of going, we kind of hoped that we could sweep this under the rug and they're not letting us, so now we actually have to do something.
Yes.
Like, we thought, you know, we could just keep this piece of crap on somewhere else on the show, but they're still after us, so we gotta appease the internet, you know, and it's like, no, he was kind of a dick, and yep. Maybe you should get rid of him. Like, stop blaming us for you completely over...
trying to hold you justifiable. Like,
the oversight of not knowing that... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, screw that guy.
Yeah, how dare we do that? Hold people accountable for their actions. It's a magical thing.
Oh, yes.
I feel like Shannon was saying it earlier, and it's a wonderful thing. We never did get around to it, but as far as like shows being on and off, so that's just generally the shows being off for a couple of weeks. This show in particular, you have not heard since May. But that, let me rephrase this.
Star Wars.
This campaign. Star Wars picture. You also may not have heard much of this show because we had a lot of technical difficulties with the D&D.
That broke my heart.
Series.
That actually broke my heart.
Yeah.
Felt bad about that one. I mean, I've said it before. This is mostly, you know, for us. I like that other people get to listen, but I just like having a weekly tabletop game. But yeah. We did it and we put in the effort to get it recorded, and then stuff still was just messing up and there's just nothing you could do about it. But yeah, May... way back in May is when we finished Act 2, and the intention then was, okay, we're going to, you know, take a couple of weeks like we usually do, play a different game, and then we'll just get right back to it. I figured we would have been back to this already, but of course we had a million other things that came up and did the thing. So I still think we'll be done with this by the end of the year. I think we'll be wrapping up like no later than December. We should get through the final episodes. If not, it'll be probably the beginning of next year, but you guys are going to make it. I mean, again, one episode into it will be longer than I've ever managed to get this campaign through, because I'm always getting it to episode 7 and then it ends.
Let's
never again.
You know what could be fun for people that are watching the show, since we're not going to do that? Let's recap. Let's talk about where we've been since the beginning of this.
Yep.
But before we do that, Michaela says, so like Saturday at CCW, I somehow hurt my hand by clapping. And they had clappers, Michaela. How did you hurt your hands?
You clapped well. No, you clapped well so, if your hands hurt. If your hands don't hurt after an event, you did not clap hard enough.
So true story.
You did it wrong.
There was a real quick story. There are two guys. One's named Cody and one's named Charlie that go to these shows. And they're those type of fans that, Cody, K-O-T-Y. And they're the kind of fans that boo the good guys and cheer the bad guys. But, you know, they're the kind of smart fans. So they boo me. And this time they brought signs that said, like, Mr. 100 sucks. And they were making signs for people. They had a table where they were making signs for people that said, like, Mr. 100 sucks and stuff. And I'm laughing my ass off. And I'm over there talking to them. And I'm like, will you make me? Because I got new shoes. I got black and gold shoes, you know, representing the old NXT. And I told them, will you make me a Mr. 100 sucks sign, but in black and gold? So they did. And I started walking around the entire show with a sign that said Mr. 100 sucks. And everybody's like, why are you doing that? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm bored. So I come out from my...
And then over here, like 99 Kevin Nash. Just what do you do? I don't care, man.
I don't care. Pick me. Don't pick me. I come out...
You just had to get him over.
I came out for my entrance. And there's a kid who comes to all the shows. And he's holding up a Mr. 100 sucks sign. So I rip his sign up like I'm angry and throw it away. And then I pull out the one that I have and hand it to him. So I replaced his Mr. 100 sucks sign with another Mr. 100 sucks sign. And these guys
with
also,
better one.
They had the hand clappers. And everybody in the crowd had hand clappers. And I thought it was kind of annoying at first, but like that crowd reaction was loud that night. I don't think I've ever had a bigger reaction at a show. I got to drop a John Cena joke. It was a good time. So halfway through the show, when Joey Janela is wrestling KLD, I snuck down to the front row and I sat with Zach Kurgis and his friends and watched that match like I used to, you know, 5 years ago. And that was a trip. That was a blast from the past right there. Anyway, that's my story. Anyway.
There you go. Sounds like a helpful time.
It's good.
It was a good show. It was a good show. We had a good time. It's always, I got to do commentary with Asa and Dalton almost, because Dalton went for his match. I was standing there, so I just did commentary with Asa. It was good. It's always good when the boys can come together. But anyway, next show, Ashley McClure Memorial. It's at the end of September. You know, check our Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. Now, back to this show. Let's talk about where where we started, where the saga started, Hunter. Take us back to the past to talk about tabletop games that don't suck ass.
When you said that, all I could hear was
back to work, everybody. Oh, actually, hold on before you do that. I did want to ask a serious question. Do I sound echoey at all?
Really. A little bit, but not. No, I mean, just you can tell that you're still getting stuff in the room. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad.
All right, I'll listen.
I don't think you need like sound panels or anything. I think by the time that you get stuff in there, it's not going to make a difference. Okay. It sounds like. Do you remember the one night that I had to like record from my kitchen instead of my office, and it was a little bit. It was way long ago, but it was a little bit off. I think that's like it's just a different size room is all it is.
Okay.
You want to talk about the beginning of plays, or you want to talk about the beginning of Star Wars in general?
Star Wars in general, because there really wasn't a. I mean, the beginning of plays was basically we did Ghostbusters. I wasn't even part of it. Right. I didn't join.
You were.
Well, I didn't join until like week three, I think. Because
You did the last one we did.
Yeah, last two. I held off as long as possible. Okay, then I joined in part two.
And then after that, we did
the Horrors of Perryville. Savage
World stuff. We did the Horrors of Perryville, which we're still doing technically. This the last one didn't air because we did it in person for the first time in a long time. And then of course,
I'm not even Cody's dating TV her anymore. Campaigns.
Ouch.
Yikes. Our longest running campaign of anything that we've done is Dawn of Defiance. So we started Dawn of Defiance. I would have to go back and look, but I want to say it was a little over a year ago now, if I remember correctly. I think it was last September. So it's like right at a year, somewhere around there. And Dawn of Defiance started with, originally it was just Lindsay, Shannon, and Tanner. Cody didn't join in until later, and it was essentially just a ragtag group. I mean, I'll let you guys talk about your characters, but a ragtag motley crew of people brought together on a station, on a space station, and suddenly drawn into this fight with the Empire. And people who had barely had any Imperial tanglings at all up to that point. Harani started out as a YouTuber, basically.
Yeah, she
and
she was in disguise, incognito. She was looking for her friend who had disappeared, and she was a, like you said, she was a pop star. She was a or a TikTok, more like a TikToker. What's the girl, the number one TikTok girl, Charlie or something? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Asking the wrong crowd there, guy.
This is what I'm trying to tell you. Even like watching TikTok regularly with Sarah, we don't see any of that stuff because ours is curated to dogs, cats, paranormal stuff.
There it is.
That's pretty much it. That's basically it. So,
well, she.
Oh man. Speaking of, this is unrelated, but there's a paranormal one that we saw the other day. I'm gonna have to go back through her list and send to you. It is. I won't say it's horrifying, but I watched it three or four times. I don't know what to say about it.
Okay.
It looks so legitimate, and it's weird. It happens in broad daylight. It's strange. Anyway, I'll send it to you later.
Yeah. Also, but Michaela said Charlie D'Amelio. That sounds about right. So that's what Harani Tar is. She was like the number one space TikTok user. She was young. I think she's she was a teenager when it started.
Yeah.
She was the peppy, pretty girl because, you know, I wanted to play against type, obviously. And she became embroiled in this fight on a space station, if I remember correctly, where we all kind of came together.
Yeah.
And for the first couple episodes, I tried really hard not to kill anybody, and I didn't. That was actually a major turning point for her character. The first time she killed somebody, because one thing I wanted to put across in these games, whenever you see games like this or just video games in general, whenever you kill people without, you know, second thought, like you just gun them down and whatever.
Right.
And I wanted to bring something more realistic to Harani Tar, the fact that she had never killed anybody. So it would have an impact. You know where I got the inspiration, Hunter? Did you ever play the Tomb Raider reboot?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I loved it. I think I've said it before, the very first one that they put out, which was now like, what, 2012, 2013?
Yeah.
Several years ago, but the very first of that reboot was my game of the year that year. That was the same year that like Bioshock Infinite and a bunch of other things came out. I didn't love anything more than that. I ended up playing all three of them, as a matter of fact. One of the very first full digital games I got was the third one of that series because it was something I knew I would go back and play again.
Well, there's a part in that first game where the first time Lara Croft kills somebody, it's such an impact on her. And that's how I wanted Harani to be. And Harani has then gone from, I know I'm telling you, and we'll go person by person here, just give him a little bit, you know. Harani has gone from that like really naive, innocent to almost bloodthirsty eventually.
Archer Rebellion.
Yeah. She's become bloodthirsty and almost hateful and spiteful, especially after whatever Tanner's character's name was. Crane, I think?
Crane Halen.
The disappearance of Crane Halen really impacted her too, and she started to resent the Rebellion, resent the Jedi. She's just a very bitter person now, and I think she's had a really good character arc over, you know, the course of time.
I think in a lot of ways it ended up being really poignant that the first person that she killed also was a stormtrooper, because it's so easy to just, you know, like you said, in these kinds of games or in this medium, to just mow down stormtroopers and not think of it. And the sequel trilogy tried to do something with that in the first like 5 minutes of the first one, and make it, you know, everyone realize, oh, the stormtroopers are real people, and that bloody handprint and everything. Mm-hmm. But then it just kind of never really went anywhere. Within the same movie, Finn just starts mowing down stormtroopers himself. For Harani, that was a big deal, because she had no dealings with the Empire, had no reason to go up against them. But when they wouldn't stop coming, sure, her hand was forced. And it was like from that moment on, there was this switch that just went off. And it's you can't turn it back the other way once it's there.
Yeah. Once you kill your first person, you can't unkill them.
There's a saying that I was seeing recently. A lot of people, you know, I talked to you guys about how it drives me crazy that so many people think that like pain and drama is the only way to progress as a person. I think this is a good example of how it's not always progress. Like in a lot of ways, Harani has regressed. In a lot of ways, it's for the worse as a person. I can't remember exactly how it goes or who it's from, but it's from a book, and the gist of it was, you know, 10 spears go into battle, one comes back. You haven't identified the one that, how is it exactly that it goes? Everybody looks at that as you've identified the strongest one, and realistically, you just identified the one that would not break. Those are not necessarily the same thing. Right. Just because it didn't break doesn't mean that it is the strong one and the most powerful one. It's just the only one that managed to survive.
Yeah.
And so she's kind of that in a lot of ways, I think.
She's traded in. She was so bubbly and personable. And, you know, she talked her way out of everything in the beginning. And she's kind of traded that off for a more violent, you know, she's prone to shoot now. She's quick to shoot. She's losing her grip on humanity in a way. And if I have my way, she's not going to have a happy ending. Like, she's one of those characters that, like, you can't, she might have a moment of redemption, but she can't have a happy ending. But we'll see what happens.
So I had to look it up because it was driving me crazy.
Yeah,
it's from the Stormlight Archive by Brandon Sanderson.
Yep, Brandon Sanderson. I thought it was a Sanderson quote because I've had friends reading through it right now. And I feel like I heard this recently.
Yeah, the character says specifically, 10 spears go into battle and 9 shatter. Did the war forge the one that remained? No. All the war did was identify the spear that would not break. And I feel like that's pretty indicative of her. She's not been shaped and forged by the war. This is who she is as a person. All it did was bring something out in her of, this is how I am.
Yeah.
I've just never been put into that situation.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of cool.
She's my favorite character that I've ever played in a tabletop game. I feel like she has so much depth that, I'm really happy about that. But enough about me. Let's go over to, well, Hunter, you're hosting. All right.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, you know, of the people that we have, we don't get back in here. To quickly sub in for Tanner, because I don't know that he's gonna make it in.
No,
Tanner's
actually
the only person who has had to go through.
He actually did stop by. Is he here? Well, he drove by. Okay. Him and his wife and his kid. They may have just been in Cape, because he said he wanted to show Brandy the house, so he skedaddled. Yeah. So,
actually, I'll do Tanner in a minute because Lindsay's here. I'd rather her be able to talk about Iris Nay, who started a. Ooh. Loner.
Fuck, look at that.
Loner. I was gonna say a smuggler, but I mean, really, she was whatever she needed to be in the moment, just whatever could keep her going and keep her moving. Yeah. And I feel like if anybody has, I love that Iris has sort of a found family story without it being the cliche, like, oh, these are my people now. It's kind of like Hirani. It's a lot of trope subversion. Iris, in a lot of ways, I think is the most identifiable as the leader of the group. Whereas Hirani might be the face, Iris really is the one that keeps things rolling in the background. And I always found that really fascinating.
She's saved our asses so many times. Like
more times than we could ever count.
Except for the one time she almost killed Tanner's ass. That happened.
Well, to be fair, maybe she was trying to save you in some way.
She just saved us a lot of headache, or you guys a lot of headache, I suppose.
Yeah.
The whole like found family thing has definitely been a just over time her feeling she can trust the whole group, as opposed to like before it was just I'm gonna watch my own back, and if I need to turn on you, I will type situations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I at one point in time, and I don't remember who I was talking to. I want to say now it might have been Zach. It may have been Kyrgus at one of the parties here. We started talking about this, and he said something about, yeah, they're like the Suicide Squad. And I was like, ah, man, I don't think so, because the Suicide Squad really is this, you know, in every iteration, they are this sort of found family. They love each other. They pick on each other. But, you know, it's villains with a heart of gold. And I'm like, this is almost the exact opposite. If they're anti-heroes, you guys are almost more like anti-villains. I mean, you're doing the right thing and for the right reasons and everything, but at the same time, these are people who have been hardened by their experiences. And even if things are better on the surface in a lot of ways, they're also sometimes a lot worse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what we were just talking about with Hirani. I think Iris has maybe escaped the bulk of the worst thing. She's probably better off than she was in the first place.
Well, if anything, she's kind of more trusting, especially of like the Rebellion group, because she was taking a little bit more aspect of participating and getting to know more of the team and stuff. Although after this last bit, that could backtrack a little.
Yeah, after Varth showed his true colors and revealed himself as a double agent, I knew that was going to have a pretty profound effect on most everybody, but maybe specifically Iris, because Hirani's already burned it to the ground, right? No, nobody's right. No masters, you know. Pick what is it the guy says in The Last Jedi? Don't pick no sides. Or it's Antonio Banderas. What's his name?
Benicio del Toro. What's his character? What is his name? Wasn't it even his character?
Oh,
name.
They made up a name. He didn't have. Yeah, he didn't have a real thing. But it was basically like live free, don't join. That's what it was. That was his thing. Don't join a side, just do whatever you have to do. Whereas I feel like Iris has got the double whammy of I can actually lead these people and I can do better for myself and for them, and maybe that's good. But leadership is a lot harder than it looks from the outside, and sometimes it may not be worth it. I have to wonder, and I don't want to overplay my hand here, but Lindsay and I have talked a little bit about Iris's parents and her family and stuff not recently in the interim, but in between episodes. I have to wonder if that might, you know, color and inform her opinion of her parents, because I'll let her tell it, you know, her familial relationship, but the gist of it is it's not great, and there might be a reason why.
Yeah, basically her parents are part of the Bothan spy network, so, like, they just sell information. It doesn't matter which side they're on. That's their focus. Pretty much as a child, they basically were prepping her to do the same sort of thing and join the group. But the fact that they were never around actually made her not want to do all of that and just kind of went off and did her own thing, even though she still has that skill set for that bit. But she's kind of seeing it now as I can use these abilities for something better than just making money.
Right.
And she's a cat.
I was thinking about
also
I was thinking about something as you were saying that, but I'm coming back to it. Go ahead, Shannon.
Well, as I say, while you're thinking of that, I want to point out something to you guys. What you can't see is my crotch area. And the reason I bring that up is because
yes. All right, moving on.
There's a thing. There's the actual story here. So I keep mentioning these spiders, right? I've found the most brown recluses in this room. I have glue traps down, and I've caught at least 5 of them in this room. So my desk area right now is, other than this light, is completely dark. So underneath my desk, every time I feel anything, I feel like a hair rub against my shorts or something, I freak out.
He freaks out.
Because I keep thinking, like, that is a brown recluse crawling up my leg. Now, the good news is, I've researched brown recluses. I've researched them for the past week. They can't hurt you. A brown recluse cannot hurt you unless it gets trapped under your clothing and the pressure forces its head to bite into you because its fangs or whatever are not long enough to actually hurt you. So if I have one crawling up my leg, all it can do is crawl up my leg. It can't actually hurt me. And I keep trying to tell myself that. So that way, even if it is crawling up my leg, I could just brush them off and be like, I'm good. Thanks. So
it's fine. Go away.
It's going. Yeah. Anyway, I'm done.
I'll spend a second kind of recapping Tanner. And I say Tanner's adventure here because Tanner's the only one who's actually lost a character. Yeah. Now, part of that was planned in a way.
Well,
I feel like at the point that it happened, it had reached a fairly obvious conclusion. But right. Yeah, Crate Halen, who was mentioned earlier, and then Sigurd Talon, of course, his new character, come to find out are actually blood relatives. They're actually brothers. They were taken by separate families. It's a tale as old as Star Wars time. But Crate, of course, then resurfaced. Yet another bit of betrayal to find, you know, toward the end of the most recent act. So not only is Varth a double agent, the Imperial agent that they rescued way back in episode one, come to find out he's been working for them the whole time. Crade's still out there. He's managed to survive. We know that Valen Draco is still out there. He's managed to survive. It's in a lot of ways is that. You know, go to Star Wars story of if you don't see them die, then they're not dead. And Crate has been a good example of that. But I think what Tanner has done really well is those two characters are very much two different sides of the same coin. Once Crate started leaning toward the dark side, there was no turning it back. It was very clear. Every time that I offered the opportunity, there was no resisting. Sigurd's now been offered a couple of opportunities to go dark, and he has resisted every time, even when it would have been really beneficial. Like, there's more than once that I was reasonably sure I was going to get to kill another character of his, or at least, you know, take him off the table, and he still pulled it out. So, he's kind of the more representation of the classic Jedi. Cody, on the other hand, as Kruskog Zubane, who we've only known for a brief period of time. We've only had Kruskog around for two episodes now, if I remember correctly. Two or three, right?
Six, Core of Corruption, and then the most recent one.
That's what I thought. Yeah, six and seven, because it all took place.
When you say episodes,
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, okay.
This is the only show where I have to clarify that we don't call them episodes, we call them installments. Right. These are individual installments of overall episodes, which are parts of acts, and then there it's a whole campaign. But Kruskog's only been around for two entire episodes, basically the entirety of the time on Alderaan. And I feel like he's probably, intentionally otherwise, the most mysterious, because he's the most unknown of the group, having only been around for a brief period of time. What exactly his personal motivations are? Kruskog came in as an informant for Bail Organa, and so we've gotten a lot of his personality, his very... recently, I've been rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine with Sarah, and I feel like Kruskog is as close as you're going to get to a Captain Holt in this, as Andre Brower's character, which is very straightforward. I'll let Cody tell the story from there, but I just... Yeah, I feel like Kruskog is if Hirani is the heart and Iris is the soul, then Kruskog might be more of the moral compass of the party, I guess, for lack of a better term. I feel like he's the one who's constantly trying to stay on a particular path, and even that's been compromised. But I'm going to stop telling the story and let him tell it.
Yeah, that's... You're talking about moral compass being compromised. There have certainly been some parts of that in the last parts of the story. Being held down on Coruscant as long as he was, being an informant, Kruskog tried to steel himself into being what a Jedi is supposed to be. As you said, very neutral, relatively speaking, emotionally, trying to be engaged in the mission, what your objective is, get it done. Harm no one that need not be harmed or need not be brought into conflict that way. Being brought into this group through way of Bail Organa, admittedly, he has come to like these people a bit. As Kruskog, being a Jedi after Order 66, hasn't really had much in the way of camaraderie, hasn't really even sought out much in the way of camaraderie, and in part to keep himself safe. The few of he that exist in terms of his people, they're... You don't end up lasting very long if you find yourself in the company of multiple others that tends to bring you out into view far too much. going through the core of corruption, going through everything that has gone on in Coruscant, you nailed it. There's been some of that moral compass. There's been, he's been pressed at this point to make decisions he never thought he would have to make, which is the good of the mission or the greater good compared to the common and more direct good. He's been forced to make those kinds of decisions. And it's something that even being a Jedi, as relatively brief a time as he had before Order 66, all things considered, isn't something he faced very often. You know, he wasn't in at that point a high portion of the Jedi Order. He wasn't in any form of leadership to where those overarching decisions needed to be made. He was very much just a person on the ground level, as it were. So for him to be faced with these decisions of, do we leave people, especially now that, spoiler alert for those that haven't listened all the way through to this most recent episode, Jedi Master Dinia being taken, again, maybe not direct camaraderie with this person for a long period of time in Master Dinia, but someone who is an elder of his people, someone who could be the sage guide and the person to help reconstruct in whatever the hope may be the future of the Jedi, that person being taken and having to see the bloodshed that came within that happened on the ship and with Varth turning, I think at this point, not to look too far in the future, there's a lot over what has happened these last few weeks and months that Kruskog is probably going to have a lot of difficulty reckoning with, because it admittedly isn't very simple. It's not a very black and white thing. There's a whole lot of gray, and he's been taught not to do in gray.
Yeah, I didn't fully explain it there earlier, but this is kind of what I was trying to get around when it comes to explaining Kruskog on my end, as far as my perception of him. What I really like is that when we added another Jedi, I know there was some concern of, like, Jedi are all Jedi, right? We already have one Jedi. We went through one. We got Tanner doing another, and then we got another one. How's it going to be different? And you guys are two sides of the same coin in the best way, because Krayt and Sigurd are very much the classic film representation of the Jedi, where, yeah, we're told that they're not meant to be emotional, and yet these guys are very much the heroic types, and so they're constantly struggling with the light and the dark side. Kruskog is very much more of the, and I don't want to weigh him down with this, but to me, the more expanded universe, let's look at what the Jedi, what we're told they're supposed to be, and let's actually do that.
Right.
And then what would a character in that situation actually do if they were upholding the Jedi code? Like, it's easy to look back at Luke and go, okay, well, he's the one, he's the chosen one, he's going to lead the new order when it comes about. And as much as I love Luke, that was one of the things I really did like about the sequel trilogy, was that it becomes very clear very quickly, Luke is a bad choice for that. Luke was always way too emotional. I mean, the original series let him fail. You know, he leaves Dagobah way too early. When he comes back, he still doesn't seem to understand that it doesn't all have to rest on his shoulders. And so, yeah, when he does eventually lead things, they win the battle, but they end up losing the overall war because he's not there. Sigurd and Krayt are two sides of that fit really well into that, and you want to have that archetype. But it's also really, really compelling to see that character, that very traditional film Jedi, play up against a more, this is what we're told the Jedi are supposed to be type character. Those two don't always mix very well. You guys, you know, are constantly kind of back and forth on what the Jedi are supposed to be, and that's, I find that really interesting, because on the one hand, I don't, I can never handle a party of all Jedi. Like, there's got to be more things going on. But I also don't want to completely get away from that part of Star Wars, because as interesting as that is, when you leave it out entirely, I think you lose a little something special about that universe. Yep. So you guys have done a good job of intentionally or otherwise showing two sides of that force, no pun intended, and what it can be for different people.
And I appreciate you bringing up the extended universe. I know you said you didn't want to try to weigh me down with that, but intentionally that was at least the way I tried to look for inspiration for Kruskog. I went away from the movie series because, like you said, we had in both iterations of the Jedi and the party, someone who kind of fit that archetype. So I was hoping for something different. And admittedly, someone who's relatively unversed in the extended universe, it gave me something I didn't know about, or somewhere I didn't really have any preconceived notions to kind of toy and tinker with. I mean, yeah. Heck, the fact I have a light whip is exclusive. That's from the extended universe.
Right.
And that was something, yeah. like you said, even going against type, that was very intentional. I didn't want to have a lightsaber because yeah. that's, we've seen them. We know what they do. Okay, right. cool. Next contestant. Yeah. And I thought that yeah. it brought a very different, especially because in my efforts as Kruskog until the last few battles, I haven't used the light whip unless it completely unavoidable. And that's kind of the thought with that, is that in his character, even with the limited interaction he has overall with Sigurd, he sees that reliance upon the weapon, and he's probably seen in his time right. as a Jedi, that's... There's a reason that the image and the emblem and everything that's used of the Jedi Order is the saber, and it seems like it dilutes what the entire order was supposed mm-hmm. to be down to their soul, like, icon. And I don't think he wanted to be in that way tied to that. I thought he wanted to pursue something a bit different. I think that's kind of played along with what I was hoping to make for the character.
And these days, anyone can wield a lightsaber. I told Lindsay this earlier when we were talking about the characters. I said, don't forget.
Two.
Harani has a lightsaber now.
Ah, oh, crap, she does.
She does.
I'd forgotten too until he said because, something.
And because we haven't leveled up, that means she has two level options to possibly, you know, take force expertise. And
yeah.
Before we go too much farther, I think we would be remiss if we didn't. We haven't done this in a long time. Let's give a quick shout out to Piney.
Oh yeah.
No, yeah. we're not going to do that.
No. Here you go.
Well,
it's
howdy.
Well, man.
Did I ever see this?
I don't know if I showed this it to you or not.
Is she sweet on me?
I don't like, think yeah, I've seen this, and I don't like it.
And then Harani's like, what?
I don't like this at all.
This from the chat, please.
Jesse Kimball. Stepped in. Shannon was taking a break from the show, and so at the beginning of episode 2, Jesse Kimball stepped in and played through the entirety of episode 2 with us all throughout Dark of the Hutt's palace. Shannon came back toward the very last episode, or the installment, if I remember correctly. And Jesse played a Bothan scout named Piney,
who
was from somewhere around the planet of Alabama, and he... He came from the Appalachian Star Belt, and he just...
Oh, damn it.
Piney, what I found really funny about that was, so, you know, he was a great little, like, one-off addition. It was fun. We had to find a way to write him out, because at that time, I think that's when Jesse was also... He was moving and doing a bunch of other stuff, and so we were going to go back to the traditional cast, and so we were like, we're going to find a way to write him out. And essentially it came down to Piney didn't like the fact that he kept getting paired up with Crade on missions in between because the two of them didn't get along. And so finally he asked to be transferred to another division within the Rebellion, and he was never heard from again.
Getting to kill him,
but as
upset about that
as is tradition with Jesse Kimball characters in games here on PZ85 Plays, he's not dead, which means frankly he could be anywhere and he could show up again at any time.
I think
there's no telling when he might come back.
I think Piney ended up stealing a small starship and driving down to Space Mexico, and they call him El Jefe.
You beat me to
where
it.
He sells nachos.
Yep, selling nachos out of his space truck.
Pizza the Hut.
I guess at this point character we haven't really gone in depth is on is Graz, and there's a reason for that.
No, you know, strong
boy. Graz very.
I disagree with you.
Okay, here's.
Have enough people, but we love Graz.
You said earlier that Harani is the soul of the group. I'd say Graz is the soul of the group because Harani is the she's the personality. She's the mouth of
she's
the group.
The face.
Yeah,
she's
face. The face.
Very much the bard of this party for sure.
Graz is the unsung hero because he went from just like you pitched him to us as just here's an extra character that I'm gonna throw in because you guys need an extra person to help in combat. Right. And then he has become a beloved character on his own. And I love his arc too.
Graz was 100%. I don't know how much we've talked about this on the show, so this might be new information for people who've been listening for a long time. Graz was very literally a means to an end for me. When we first started, again, the only players were Shannon, Lindsay, and Tanner.
We had no
and Dawn of Defiance is built. Yeah, I mean, you guys had a practical non-combatant in the noble. You had your scoundrel who was kind of your rogue, your sneaky type. And then you had a Jedi who could do a little bit of everything. Jedis are red mages, basically. A little bit of everything, but not, you know, any one thing in particular as well as anybody else. So Dawn of Defiance as a campaign, and even though I modify a whole lot of it, is built in the idea that your party is 4 to 6 players. And it was after the first couple of, because you guys got all the way through episode one without Graz, but it was after those first few encounters where I kept having to go through and modify, like, I gotta take stormtroopers out, I gotta take enemies out. I was like, it would be so much easier on my end to just make a DMPC. I'll pick a class that doesn't really talk, so I don't have to worry about excluding myself from making decisions, and he's just there to help in combat. Well, what better than a Wookiee, right? a Wookiee soldier, first of all, give you the tank. Somebody who's there to just, yeah, deal damage and soak up the damage where he can, and I'll just put him in strategic places, and that will be easier than having to modify every encounter to remove enemies. And so Graz, and I don't think people remember, started out as a pretty serious character. Mm-hmm. Like, he was this dead serious soldier who had come from Kashyyyk, who was, you know, joining up to sort of try to help in areas where his people were more, you know, prevalent than others. And he just carried that bowcaster around and his vibro axe, and he just, you know, point and kill. He was the Hulk. And just smash. Over time, I don't know even...
The fact
you tell them, because I can't point at a point and say this is when it happened.
He was also Groznik, and we're all like, I ain't gonna remember that. We're calling you Graz. That immediate like nickname.
Yeah.
And we're just like, we love this Wookiee, and it's like nothing bad can happen to him.
I think it's really when, and maybe I'm being selfish here, but it's when Harani and Graz developed their relationship. And they became co-pilots together, that he really became a character on its own. And then he got the voice modulator. He turned into a really good comedic foil for the team. Graz.
I am hungry.
Graz.
Yeah, it was when the Midnight Coterie came into play. I felt like it would be beneficial to have Graz as that kind of character. Put him on the co-pilot spot, or put him in the pilot seat and just let him make pilot checks. So that way he's not still continuously attacking. He wasn't even good at that stuff. I dedicated a level up to a skill focus just so he'd be a better pilot. And a lot of his stuff has just been happy accidents. Like, I didn't even think about upgrading his mechanical ability because Harani was the mechanic. She's the skill monkey. She's got all the skills. So Graz is a pilot. He's a pilot, but he doesn't know how to fix anything, so he very much thinks he does. He got the goggles down, he's just welding parts of the side of the ship.
She lets
him. Ronnie's off to the side going, just don't.
Yeah, let him. It's like when you're playing video games with your little brother, and you give him the second player unplug controller, and you're like, you're helping.
Yeah, you do it.
You
fix it. So Graz has been legitimately also one of my favorite characters I've ever played at a tabletop game. And I also feel like kind of selfish and dumb saying that when I'm the one running the game. But he still works exactly as he makes no decisions. He is purely there to point and kill and do the things that need to be done. A lot of times he makes things worse because he has to make skill checks that he ends up failing. So I feel like he balances himself that way. And he's just a mess. You guys are not prepared for this next episode with him, things that are coming up, because it's gonna get so wild.
Okay,
I don't even want to tell you. I can't say anymore. You'll find out next week. But it's things you're going to have to do to begin this new act, and the fact that Graz is going to be involved is just.
Oh no!
I can say no more. Let's just put it this way. You know when in The Wizard of Oz, when they finally make it to the Emerald City and everyone's getting cleaned up and they like steam the lion's fur and it's all curly and clean and stuff?
Oh no.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, tune in next week.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh goodness.
That's honestly probably a good place to wrap it up, to pitch to people next week. So next week we'll be on our shit properly. And
my apologies.
Well, no.
No. Again, I like I said, it was Now, probably 30 minutes ago, I realized that Kroz was also not leveled up. I was also not prepared to jump into a full session tonight. I think after being gone for so long, we needed a minute to just kind of reintroduce ourselves, back into the groove, and then be ready to go.
I think I changed my mind. I think I am going to post this episode because this is a really fun trip down memory lane for people that want to get reintroduced to the character. So really quick, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Well, no, this is Hunter's hosting show. Hunter, introduce us now, please.
God bless.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of PZ85 Plays as we prepare to wrap it up. I'll introduce the cast. Why not? There's Jen Young playing Hirani Tar, who you just heard all about.
Yo.
There's Lindsay Wolfgang playing Iris Nay. Hola. Cody Sandusky right over there playing Cruz Cog Zubane. And I'm your DM, Double H. And something I also want to mention is that just to kind of prep you for next week, the listeners for next week, you guys have heard some of this, but you know, we ended Act 2 of the Dawn of Defiance campaign with a lot of heartbreak. It was our Empire Strikes Back, right? We lost Denia. She's been captured. Kraid and Draco both have survived some insane situations, and the fact that they're still alive and still out there is super problematic for our group. The Resurgence is lost, so the Rebellion center is destroyed. Shannon wants to say something, so I'm going to stop so he can.
No, I was going to say, one of my favorite side characters that I've created, Nareda, is missing.
Missing in action.
And everyone else was gunned down brutally, so who knows what happened to her.
We got a new face that we don't know much about.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a mysterious Imperial seeming turncoat who's with the group now, and they don't have the greatest track record with Imperial turncoats now that Varth has revealed his true color, so there's that. That's a problem. Yeah. And at the end of all this, you know, our heroes are alive and well, save for, you know, potentially Nareda. But in general, we ended on a pretty downturn note. I'm not going to tell you yet what's going to happen at the beginning of episode 8, obviously, but I will tell you that the timing is going to be 6 months is what happens. 6 months of time between where we ended and where we're going to pick up. So our characters have been milling about for those 6 months, and you'll find out at the beginning of that episode what they've been doing. I'm tasking them now with between now and next week deciding what they've been doing, where they've been, and what they have accomplished and how they've changed in that time frame. So when we pick up, it'll be 6 months after the loss of the Resurgence, and we'll find out where it is that they are going next. In episode 8, which I believe I revealed way back in May, is titled The Gem of Alderaan.
Okay.
And that's all I got for you. That's it. Yep. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Again, be sure to join us here next week on the dot, no later than 8 o'clock Tuesday night for the next edition of PZ85 Plays. For the rest of this week, we should be back up and running as well. We got PWU coming your way tomorrow night. We got AD coming back on Thursday. We got a little horse time this Friday. We're getting the horses back out of the stable and not just in Red Dead.
Yes.
And then, again, next Tuesday, we're back here for the very first episode of Act 3 of the Dawn of Defiance campaign. There they are. Look at all those horses.
And Hunter.
until next. Yes.
I am determined to do this show on Saturdays that I've been hyping for months. I'm determined to do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming soon.
Half-hour headline.
It's got to happen because I...
No turning back.
No going. Yeah. That's what
it was.
Half Hour Headlines is mine. I still think it's a good title. I still hold on. Right. I think it's the best thing I've come up with in years.
I think Cody should be the lead into your show. Let him do the headlines, and then Shannon can do the, all right, here's what everything that he just said, here's why it all sucks.
Here's my opinion.
Here are all the problems with that.
I would, first, for the record, I would love to do a hard news show with Cody Sandusky. Like, that would that would be a lot of fun. But yeah.
I love it.
So coming soon. I'm going to try to get it up and running.
Oh, yeah, I want it.
Because I would love to turn Thursday into a fun show, because it's like you can watch those shows every time the show starts and we're like, hey, guys, tonight Lindsay's got a top five. We're going to be talking about our favorite flavors of ice cream. And then it's like, but we're going to start off with this story about a guy who raped his mother out in Las Vegas. And the crowd just...
Yep.
Every time it starts innocently, and then Chernobyl happens.
Yeah, so
we try to bring him back, and there's just no bringing him back. There's no turning back at that point.
Nope.
All right.
So there it is. For the rest of this week, tune in, catch them. You know where to find them, here on our Facebook page. And next Tuesday, we get back to it with Dawn of Defiance. For Shannon, for Lindsay, and for Cody, and for the missing in action Tanner, who was there briefly but also just outside, I am your Game Master, Double H. Until next Tuesday, may the Force be with you, and we'll see you then. Later.